Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Ganesh. And dear listeners, Sairam from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet. And we are into the month of June. The summer heat in Prashantinilam is not gone yet, but is surely on the decline. There is a whiff of freshness and newness in this month, and this happens every year. This month is actually such a welcome month in Prashantinilam calendar, because it is from now that a new chapter begins in the calendar of the ashram. Because it is with the coming of June that you see a new white and bright army of Sai. It is in this month that you see the hallowed educational institutions of Prashantinilam, the Sri Satya Sai Primary School, the Sri Satya Sai Higher Secondary School, the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, filled with new faces, eager eyes and supple hearts, keen to absorb all that they see and experience in this divine hamlet. In fact, tomorrow onwards, all the students will participate in a 3-day summer course in Indian culture and spirituality. So there will be students from all the campuses, the girls students from the Anandpur campus, the boys from the Prashantinilam, Vrindavan and the Mudunalli campuses here in the Purnachandra Auditorium, assembled for this 3-day workshop in Indian culture and spirituality. I remember how when Swami started summer courses way back in the 70s, then there was no Satya Sai University or Sai colleges like now. In those days, Swami gave the opportunity to youth from all over India to participate, and they were given the chance through a selection procedure, and it was a 30-day affair where there were talks by very eminent people, there were distinguished scholars, and of course, every evening, the most looked forward to moment was when Bhagwan took the mic. And that is how, dear listeners, we have so many series of books today. Summer Showers in Vrindavan 1972, Summer Showers in Vrindavan 1973, 74, Summer Roses in the Blue Mountains, this is the summer course that happened in Ooty. 1976, similarly, you had summer showers in 1977, 78, 79, and so on. The list goes. And in each of these occasions, Swami elaborated on one aspect or one epic from Indian culture, from the scriptures. And if it was Upanishads in one year, it was Brahma Sutras in the second year, it was Ramayana in the third year, it was Bhagavatam, it was in the fourth, it was Mahabharata in 1976. Therefore, for all the newcomers who had joined the institution, this was truly an enriching experience, indeed an overwhelming orientation, very overwhelming orientation to a new way of thinking, to a new approach to life. And the passion with which Swami used to give himself away completely for this event is something very moving. Swami would not just give a discourse in the evening, every day during the summer course, every morning after granting darshan to all in the morning, Swami would go to the college and sit with the boys and listen to all the lectures. And then he would come to the dining hall and again spend time with the students as they had their lunch. He would oversee the serving of food. He would check if the boys who have come from so many places all over India are comfortable with the food, the taste and the arrangements. And then in the evening there would be cultural programs too, on many days. And a music program was a must, especially on the last day. And it was always a treat, literally for the stomach, yes, because the food during summer course was heavenly. But what is more important is this treat that happened through all the senses. You had such beautiful darshans, you had such beautiful discourses, you had such beautiful music for the soul. Let me just give you one glimpse of the boys' music program.
Namo Satya Sai Baba. Namo Namo Satya Sai Namo Satya Sai Baba Namo Satya Sai Namo Satya Sai Baba Namo Satya Sai Namo Satya Sai Baba Namo Satya Sai Namo Vishvateja Jyotishwarupa Namo Vishvateja Jyotishwarupa Namo Vishvateja Jyotishwarupa Namo Vishvateja Jyotishwarupa Namo Satya Sai Baba Namo Satya Sai Kanchina antarangamu ponge ee naati sukhamu ye naadu pandamu ye nomuno chaamu ipudu kalugunnamu namo satya sai baba namo satya sai వికసించినవి మనసు తనువు పులకించినవి వరుసగ నిలచి వడలను మరచి సరించి కోరేము నీకెంతరిలచి నమో సత్య సాయి బాబా నమో సత్య సాయి నమో సత్య సాయి బాబా
That is just one song, and there will be series of songs like these beautiful songs which will be part of the summer course, and Swami would be personally involved in the selection of the songs and the singers. In fact, in every aspect of the summer course, Swami's involvement used to be complete and comprehensive. There are so many new students who have just come into his fold, and Bhagwan would start touching their lives in his own mysterious ways. In some ways, you would be actually laying the foundation in their hearts for what is to grow, what is to blossom in the days to come as they stay at his lotus feet. That's why the summer course is a very powerful experience. It works in various dimensions. So I thought, today let's dwell for some time on these magical moments experienced by students during summer course. Because this orientation program that Bhagwan conducted every year helped the students in so many manifold ways, and we can get only a few glimpses of that once you look at what the summer course has done to each of these new students, and we'll listen to some of these students. How was their experience when they were here for the first time going through this workshop? So that is what we'll do in the first part of this episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. And then we'll move on to the second part of the inspiring conversation that I and Harishankar had with Mr. Satish Naik, the chief engineer of the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust, as well as the Prashant Nilayam Ashram. So we had the first part of it last Thursday. We will listen to the second part, and believe me, this is a very inspiring conversation with a person who walks the talk. So that is coming up in the second half of this episode. First, we will listen to those eternal memories of summer course in Indian culture and spirituality. So that is what is in store for us in this last leg of Thursday Live from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and the time in the studios now is 8:50, and the discussion today is on summer course in Indian culture and spirituality. Well, I'm not going to linearly go and share the objective of the course, the structure of the summer course, the methodology and so on. Those are important details, no doubt. But what I want to share with you today is only a few instances where summer course has left an indelible impression on young minds. Even though on the face of it, summer course is a series of lectures and divine discourses, there is so much more that happens quite silently, but with solidly, with far-reaching ramifications. Let me give you a couple of instances. I remember talking to Brother Sohan Datta sometime in August 2012. Sohan is an alumnus of Baba's University who was named as one of the top young leaders in India by the Economic Times. The Economic Times is India's leading business newspaper. So they had conducted a young leaders program in 2012, the Economic Times Young Leaders Program. This program is a platform for recognizing and rewarding India's most promising young managers. And out of a staggering 17,000 applicants, 28, only 28 were conferred this top honor of being top young leaders of India. And Sohan Datta, Bhagwan's student, happened to be one of them. I spoke to him after this award was announced, and as we were talking about how this achievement materialized and what were the different tests that he had to undergo and all that, I also asked him to reflect on the days he spent in Baba's University. And he said one of the first things that happened right at the start of the year was this summer course in Indian culture and spirituality. And then he went on to share his lasting memory of the first summer course, his indelible memory of the summer course experience. Let's listen to that clip.
So can you reflect your days in Bhagwan's University?
Like, firstly, the disciplined life. Initially, coming from Calcutta after living a vagabond life, it was not easy for me to settle down here, but as God had willed, I settled down slowly.
Had you had thought of joining this university?
My parents were very keen, I was not.
Okay.
So, after joining here, even for a few days, I thought of, you know, running away.
Is it?
Yeah.
So, the discipline was too much?
Yeah, in that summer course time, like in a room which normally in accommodation 14-15 we have 50, and first time staying away from parents, that wasn't that easy. So even my parents or relatives were expecting that I may come back. So I thought after summer course I will leave. Mm-hmm. I did not. Mm-hmm. Or rather, I'll tell you the first thing that happened. On the first day of summer course, my parents were leaving on that day. So I thought I'll live with them. So morning I get a first line, sat and run. Swami comes. Swami doesn't speak anything. He just looks into my eyes almost for 20-25 seconds.
Just looks into your eyes.
Yeah. So before heading towards the auditorium, I meet my parents and I tell them, no, I'm not leaving today. Maybe after summer course.
Okay.
So summer course.
So that ensured that you sail through the summer course.
Went by. First semester went by. Even my few of my roommates, they thought that I won't come back after first semester. So 3 years in Vrindavan over, 2 years in first year MSc. Went back, went out for work. And I can come back.
And you came back. Now you're so eager to come back to
university. It's like a second home. Rather, I'll prefer calling it my first home. Because I feel, so relaxed, so at ease when I'm here.
So that was Sohundata. Just that one darshan on day one of summer course, that is what ensured that the foundation is laid for his grooming at the Lord's lotus feet. So this was Sohan's experience in 2002 when he joined for his bachelor's in physics. Let us go back in time to the early 90s. In 1991, Brother Satyajit joined Baba's University for his bachelor's in sciences, majoring in chemistry. He had done his schooling in Mumbai. So he was a typical metro teenager. And things in the hostel obviously looked strange. So as I was telling you, the summer course was on. And one day, during breakfast, Satyajit whispered to his friend, Sai Satish. He said, "What is this man? We get only 4 idlis here. At home I used to eat 10 idlis for breakfast." So he just made this comment. And then both of them went for darshan as usual. And that morning, even though he was sitting in the third or fourth row, when Swami came out, he went straight to him. And mind you, this was his fourth day in the Vrindavan campus. The fourth day he's in Bhagwan's college. And Swami comes and stands right in front of him, looks straight into his eyes and says something. But Satyajit does not get it. He does not understand. So he goes near. He goes closer to Swami so that he can hear clearly what Bhagwan is saying. And now Swami repeats the question. And by that time Swami finishes asking, everyone around Satyajit is saying, "Idli Swami, Idli Swami, Idli Swami." And that is when it dawns on him that Swami is actually asking about the breakfast. And so he also finally says, "Yes Swami, Idli Swami." And then Swami asks him, "Kitna idli? How many idlis?" And Satyajit is now actually taken aback, because that, more than the question, the look on Swami's face, it was an all-knowing look. So he was actually rattled, he was shocked. He just stared at Bhagwan helplessly, and then in horror he looked at his friend Sai Satish, because he remembered what had happened in the morning. And then came the bombshell. Swami said, "What did you say? At home you get 10 idlis and here you get only 4 obviously Satyajit was speechless. He tried to cover up by being as diplomatic as he could be, and he said, "No Swami, actually these idlis are very big. These are nice idlis. These are very good," and so on. He was fumbling for words. He did not know what to say, how to defend himself. And at that moment, the Lord had shaken something in him. The Lord had begun to work on his soul. The master sculptor had begun chiseling that stone. That is how the Lord left this new soul to the campus completely mesmerized. And so mesmerized, Satyajit became that even though Swami did not speak to him after this for the next 5 years, his love for Swami only grew stronger and stronger. His pining for him only became more intense as years rolled on. Finally, look at the blessing that the Lord conferred on him, the exceptionally beautiful and intensely soul-filling opportunity of serving the Lord at close quarters for more than a decade. He was there till the last day of Bhagwan's physical sojourn on earth. It all started with that magic that Bhagwan did during the initial days of the summer course. And dear listeners, these miracles of man-making continue even now, although in a different way and in different dimensions, but it does happen. Swami is constantly working. He has virtually handpicked every student. He has selected who is going to step inside the portals of his hallowed university. And the moment that individual comes under the umbrella of his university, the process of refinement begins. I remember talking to another alumnus, Kota Shivkumar, sometime in 2011. He had joined for his MBA, business, Masters in Business Administration, in 1993, after his electronics engineering and also after having worked for 5 years. Now, of course, he is the founder and chief consultant of a HR consulting firm called Insight Consulting. I remember talking to him two years ago about his initial days in the university and how was it for him to be part of the summer course. Let's listen to him.
And summer course, sometime on the second day or third day in the camp.
Summer course is the first orientation program. Camp. For all our listeners who are not aware, I think summer course is the first orientation camp that all the boys who join Swami's institutions first go through for 15 days, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that is a terrific experience because that is the first time I was watching Swami so close when he was sitting in the canteen ready to have a breakfast and Swami would walk around and then he would be stopping near us and then looking at what we are eating so intent and keen. So it was like amazing experience. Most of the time it was as if I didn't have body consciousness. That's the feeling I had. But Swami started speaking right there. But nothing major to mention. Swami used to speak like many other students. He used to talk to me then. And once I came back to Puttaparthi, and we MBA students, all of us were requesting Swami for an interview, group interview. And Swami immediately granted. I think it was just in 1 week's time. An interesting miracle happened there. That evening, when Swami asked us to come for interview next day, we were all discussing on what sort of card we should make to take to Swami. So I suggested something. I said that we should all write, or somehow I said this, we should all write our names in the card and then give it to Swami. Somebody suggested a better idea. They said that, no, why names and all? We have this photograph with Swami during the summer course, let's put that. And finally we agreed to that idea and then we put that photograph and the card, we took it. Next day Swami took the card and he started doing like a roll call as if he is looking at names, one after another. And then when he stopped at my name, then he looked at me and he asked, how did you come? How did you come to Parthi? Then I just kept quiet and then Swami looked at me and said, you came because I put a tick on your name. So that's what he mentioned, just validating that
I put a tick on your
name. I am very sure that's what is the message he gives to every student, because my very firm impression and feeling, brother, is that when Swami says that he is going to use his property for some work in this world, anything else can fail in this world but not that. Nothing that Swami says or Swami thinks can fail in this world. So it's sure that each of us have some big or smaller role according to the way he plans, and therefore he puts a tick on everybody's name. So yes, that was a wonderful validation that I had.
For you to know that it is
exactly
who has drawn you.
Exactly.
Wow. Isn't that so beautiful? The Lord has put a tick against our name. And as you mentioned, yes, Swami does that for every person who walks into the portals of his school, of his colleges. And so beautifully he said, my strong feeling is that when Swami says he is going to use his property for some work in this world, anything else can fail, but not that. Nothing that Swami says or Swami thinks can fail in this world. So it is, what a wonderful validation he had from Bhagwan himself. And it is a message that every student who participates in the summer course gets from Bhagwan in his own way, that you are here because Bhagwan has chosen you. You are here because he has ticked against your name. You are here because he willed it so. And that is the starting point when you know that so much has been conferred on you, such a huge blessing has been conferred on you, you begin to value it and you begin to fathom and question how to make most of this opportunity. So that is what the summer course does. Let me now come to just one more of this summer course reminiscences, and this is a spectacular one. This was narrated by Brother Krishna Mohan, who too joined for his Masters in Business Administration in the early 90s, in 1992. Currently he works as a department head in Tata's Telco Construction Equipment Company, which is based in Jamshedpur in Bihar. For him, 1992 summer course was very, very special for many reasons. Now coming back to Swami, what were your best moments with Swami in those 2 years of his stay in the university?
I fell in love with Swami. In fact, I can recall one incident. I don't know how many of my friends or my classmates remember this. The first miracle, so-called miracle, happened in summer course itself. One day, what happened, there was a huge rain in the afternoon at around 3:30, and we were all just idling in the room after the lunch. So people said, no, there won't be darshan today, it's huge rain, but we were all prepared, and suddenly the rain stopped and we all went into Trivrindavan. We were waiting for Swami to come out. Swami came out and said, no, this rain, I stopped this rain. Better go back, all the devotees will get unnecessarily drenched, they will be waiting for me. If you sit inside, they will all be there. So you better go, say, tell them that the darshan is not there today, it's heavily going to rain now. I just stopped it, please go away. And he went inside. Some students, some lectures did go away, but we waited, and after 10 minutes, Swami comes back again and says, you people are not listening to me, it's going to rain heavily, I'm telling you, go back. People said, no Swami, no Swami. I said, no, this is Swami telling you, you please go away. A few students and few lecturers were still waiting, and Swami came for the third time. Again after 10 minutes time, and he came and said, see, I've already warned you, I can't hold you, hold the rain back, now I'm calling the rain. And he looked up into the sky with his hands.
Just beckoning the hand.
Yeah.
Just calling.
Calling. He just called and he went inside. Just he stepped one step inside, and then the rain, heavy rain started, and we had to rush back, run back, and by the time we reached the hostel, we were all drenched.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
The hostel is just a few meters.
Few meters away, and then we are all totally drenched. This was my first experience of Swami, and then on people started telling me about Swami and things. I read about books, but the thing that really hooked me to Swami was Swami's poems in Telugu. When he recites them before a discourse, I just fell in love with those poems. And of course, Chinakatha stories as well. Mm-hmm. And then I said, all those intricate Upanishadic or Vedic truths, all Swami puts them in 2 lines, 3 lines kind of in Telugu. And it really soothed me, and I used to mug up them, and I still collect them. Oh. And I have around 800 of them. I keep collecting them, though the books are available now.
Right.
I keep writing them and mugging them up and teaching people and all that. So I fell in love with those poems, and they are my first love actually. Mm. I keep collecting and memorizing.
So because of the profound message?
Yeah, profound message. And the way Swami's voice, yes. Really Swami's bhajans and all that. Because I was never knew the sweetness in bhajans and all that. I was not at all into those activities in my childhood. But when I got to hear these bhajans of Swami, I literally fell in love with those. And said, this is the place I wanted to be. And then, of course, the divinity of Swami slowly dawned in through the books and other people talking to us and all that. Personally, I fell in love with his bhajans and then his poems. Mm. And his discourses, so nicely he puts in all great truths with small chinakata and all that.
So for Krishna Mohan, the summer course was literally a summer shower. It was a summer shower of various kinds. Not only summer shower of rain, but it's really summer shower of poems, summer shower of Swami's bhajan, summer shower of Bhagwan's divine messages. And that is what summer course is all about. Summer course has that magic of his superhuman powers and also the brilliance of his superlative message. In fact, this reminds me of an interaction that happened between Professor V.K. Gokak, the eminent scholar and the first vice-chancellor of Bhagwan's university, and Bhagwan himself. Once in the early 70s, Swami chose Vedas and Vedic culture as the main theme for a summer course. And Bhagwan granted about 20 discourses on the Vedas. And as he was delivering these discourses, Swami quoted exhaustively from the Vedas and the Upanishads. He also quoted from the commentaries, various commentaries by scholars from East and West. He referred to the works of Sayanacharya and Yaskacharya. He talked about the writings of Max Muller, Weber, Keith and Winterness. He talked, and as Bhagwan was elucidating about Vedas and quoting from so many scholars from the Orient as well as from the Western Hemisphere, Dr. V.K. Gokak was actually astounded. He wanted to know, how did Bhagwan know all this? When did Swami study all this? So he went to Swami and he submitted at Bhagwan's lotus feet this question. He said, Swami, when did you read all this? And then Swami smiled and said in Kannada, in English, it means, Swami said, I don't have the bad habit of reading books. This is what Swami said. And then Bhagwan went on to explain. This is the secret of the emergence of the Vedas in the minds of sages and seers. All the knowledge in the universe is there in the human brain. There are many brain centers, and each is a center for one particular branch of knowledge. If a man is able to control his mind and senses and focus his mind on a particular brain center, all the knowledge pertaining to that branch of knowledge will stand revealed to him. This is what Swami said. Man has been endowed with all the knowledge in the world. And as Bhagwan explained, what is needed is control and steadying of the mind. And that is the reason why Bhagwan will always say, study to be steady. All the learning should lead to a state in which our minds remain in balance and under control. Then we will be able to discover the repository of knowledge that is there within us. When the water of a pond is limpid, the sparkling cells that lie in the bottom also can be seen. Well, that is the purpose of the summer course, to steady the minds of the young individuals, of young hearts, and help them to channelize their energies on the lines of Satya and Dharma. And it takes a lot of training and a lot of mental stamina and, of course, God's grace to walk on this path of Satya and Dharma, truth and righteousness. On this program, last Thursday, you heard the journey of one such individual who truly has walked on this path of Satya and Dharma and is today an ideal for all the students as he discharges his duties as the chief engineer of the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust and the Prashanthi Nilayam Ashram, Mr. Satish Naik. You heard the first part of this Inspired Lives episode last Thursday. Inspired Lives is our series where we focus on such individuals who have made positive difference in the lives of many with their exemplary character. So in the first part you heard how Swami guided Satish Naik to pursue and be rewarded with a job in mechanical engineering, even though he studied electrical engineering. That story is fascinating. And later how he mysteriously, Bhagwan mysteriously came to his rescue during his job as a chief mechanical engineer, South and Southeastern Railways, Government of India. And also how Swami directed him to go to the African nation of Ghana. And of course, the incredible way Swami made his presence felt in Ghana. Well, there were fantastic stories. And if you missed any of these, you can download and listen again to this episode of Inspired Lives, which we had last Thursday. And now, let's move on to the second part of this conversation with Mr. Satish Naik. And now Satish Naik goes on to share his experience of working in the World Bank, and hear again how Swami helped him, how he had at times very difficult decision to make because he did not want to compromise on his values, and how Swami gave him the faith and the courage to do that, and also how in the later part of his life he moved to Prashantinilayam, and how Bhagwan blessed him with the opportunity to participate directly in his mission. He was the one working hard. Mr. Satish Naik was the person who worked behind the scenes, whether it was the construction of the Gokulam residential complex in Vrindavan or the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences, the super speciality hospital in Bangalore, or the indoor stadium in Prashantinilayam, and so many other small major and minor projects. And even now he continues to work, even though he is past 82. What inspires him? What motivates him? From where does he get his energy and his zeal? And what is that he looks forward to in life? And what is that we should learn from his life? Well, let's listen to Mr. Satish Naik. And in conversation along with me is also my colleague from Central Trust, Harishankar. Harishankar and myself together host this series called Inspired Life. So let's listen to the second part of this episode where Mr. Satish Naik is with us and he is the focus.
After finishing 9 years in Ghana, fortunately I got through the World Bank interview and got the job there. There, the engineer's main job, apart from technical scrutiny and all, was scrutiny of procurement. Mm-hmm. The system is that no money is ever given to a government or a party, World Bank money. They call for tenders. Tenders are scrutinized by us. They place the orders. When the material comes, the material is certified by them. We also check it. And the bank pays the contractor directly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's the setup. And the procurement means you have to be very, very, very careful. Any small mistake, immediately there will be a complaint from the country of origin of that contractor who has got the complaint. Mm-hmm. Because many countries are there, and if one country feels neglected or they have been cheated, they will write to the top people in the bank, and they have a committee to look into this.
So the expectation was even the procurement has to be equitable, so you have to take care of
among them, because all are members, all countries are okay. Members. Hmm. So that was a difficult job, but at the same time interesting. And the projects I worked in were in Zaire, Tanzania, Kenya, Uganda, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Madagascar, Mozambique.
This is as part of the World Bank projects.
It was interesting, no doubt, but mostly it was procurement and checking and preparing plans.
But did you have this kind of administrative experience earlier, like did the government of India, like during your time in the railways, like were you sent on any such similar, prior to Ghana, were you sent abroad for any particular assignment?
Prior to Ghana, yes. I was sent twice for training to England.
Okay.
Again in diesel locomotive maintenance, and then once to Japan.
Okay.
For inspecting some traction motors manufactured by two different companies. Mm. So we went there with a group of four people, and I think we did a fairly good job. Swami helped us. but we could not accept one of the products. They had some inherent technical defects. So there were all sorts of pressures put on us to get that accepted.
In Japan?
In Japan. But
in spite of that product not being up to the
mark? It's okay, but not exactly up to the mark.
Right.
So we could put down on paper that these defects are there. And we did not say you take this or take that. These defects are there and this must be kept in view when you make a decision.
Right.
That was the board's decision there. And coming back from Japan, again the unseen hand worked with us, worked with me. I was alone with my colleagues. We went to check in and went to the airport. And coming out of the taxi, my briefcase opened out, something fell out. Anyway, I put it all back, went there. And when I went to the counter to check in, I found my passport was missing.
Oh.
And it was a Sunday. You couldn't even talk to any high commissioner or anybody, nothing. We didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. So again, I was praying to the unseen hand and went around looking for it, whether it has fallen anywhere on the ground. Couldn't find anything. Then I said, let me go back to the counter and see what's my fate. I went to the counter, that lady there, she was showing a passport and asking me, is this yours?
Oh.
But there's no explanation. Like, you had lost it at near the taxi cab.
Yes.
And you already checked at the various counters. So how did it happen that she... That she was possessing it.
I don't know how it happened, how it came. And, you know, they don't know much of English, these people. So I couldn't have asked them also as to what happened in those days. Now, of course, that is in 1974. So that is the thing.
So the other thing that you mentioned in Japan is there was this pressure on you at that time. You know,
when that's the same thing.
Yeah, like when you're taking that decision.
Yeah.
So in all these years, whether in England, Japan, or in Africa, were there situations like this, you know, where, you know, you were under tremendous pressure? I mean, where you want to follow a particular principle because, you know, that's what you believe in. Either because, you know, that's what your father taught you or this is what Swami has told us. And you have these pressures of various kinds. How did you cope with them? Were there really very, very challenging times in trying to really stick to these principles?
The very tense times. Mental tension was high, no doubt about it. But at the same time, there was the confidence that you would not do a wrong thing.
You never succumbed.
Consciously, I will not do a wrong thing. That's all.
And even actually, just commenting on that one issue where you mentioned that you were interviewed by one of the generals who belonged to the government.
Okay, not a general, army chap.
And then, like, subsequently, when they were convinced that what you had been doing was right all along, like, you, of course, stuck to your guns. You said, these are my principles and I followed these.
Yeah.
And the outcome was that they realized that you had been playing so fair that they decided that they would support you in all, you know, your endeavors subsequently.
Yeah, that is a lesson to be learned from that.
Yeah, and what it really brought to mind for me was Swami's statement, the Dharma Rakshati Rakshita. Here you see that as Mr. Satish Nayak, he stood firm on what he did. He stuck to his values. And what the results that came were so unexpected and so bountiful in the sense that...
It gave him a lot of freedom to go ahead and, you know...
He won the support of the head of the state himself in the project.
And when finally I was leaving for Washington from Ghana, having finished the term there, I was sleeping in the guest house. In the night, early morning, I had to get up and go to the airport at 7. I found a lot of activity of military people, military trucks coming and all that. Wondering, what is this? Then I asked one of them, what is this? No, head of state has said we should accompany you to the airport.
Oh, my God. What an honor.
So we went there. And they would not let me touch my baggage. Somebody or other was carrying everything. I thought if everything is lost, what am I to do? Then they took me straight to the VIP terminal, the separate terminal for VIPs.
Okay.
And they made me sit there. And a couple of ministers and all came to see me off. The finance minister came.
Wow.
And finance minister gave me a small envelope. This is what the head of state has given you. Now, I was wondering, what is this? Because just 2 days before that, I had gone and taken leave of him. Taken leave of him, I gave him one Swami's photo. I told him, this will always help you, keep it with you.
He accepted.
He accepted. I don't know whether he used it or not, but he accepted it. So he had sent me this envelope about half A4 size. So then I opened it. Then I thought, I hope it's not a check or anything. I opened it. It was his photograph, head of state's photograph. And he has written that, "Dear Mr. Nayak, Ghana will always be grateful to you."
Oh, wow. That is so touching, really.
Beautiful.
That is an heirloom with us now. I have given coffees to our children.
That's yes. Amazing.
Because in many ways, like I can, if I were to stand in the place of, say, Ghana or even the workers over there, the kind of service that you were able to render over there, it was something fantastic. Like,
it is not fantastic. It is inspired by Swami.
Swami.
Yes.
And
yes.
Controlled, inspired, everything by Swami. And nobody
no doubt. Because you can see, for one thing, it is values and above all the service which is rendered in love. Because that's the thing that stands out for me when I look at that episode where you fought for so long for the workers to be able to get the food for work program. I think that really would have moved them also, because that is the most significant service probably.
One example of what the workers thought, I'll give you. I was sitting in the general manager's office doing my office work. Suddenly one worker comes in with a small plastic bag. He puts it on my table. "What is this?" "It's a loaf of bread." So I asked him, "Why are you giving it?" You know, because there was scarcity of food, everybody had to go to the bakery and stand in line and buy bread. So sometimes I also stood in line to buy the bread. He said, "You see, you have come here to work for us. You should not waste your time standing in the line. We are bringing bread for you."
God.
I mean, that's the type of people there.
Yes.
Then it's an ordinary, must be equal to a class 4 staff.
Right.
That sort of man.
You can see so much heart in them.
Yes, so much, absolutely. They were responding so beautifully to the love with which you treated them.
Yeah.
And it shows how much respect they had for you, how much love they had for you.
I'm grateful to them.
Yes.
And to Swami for making them do that.
Yes. And it's such a beautiful thing also. It's like, at the right moment, you know, when, before you embarked on this trip to Africa, you had Swami's blessings.
Yes.
Though he didn't bring you to his lotus feet when you were a student, but he, at the right time, when you are going to need his support, need his grace, need his presence in plenty, at that time he brought you to his fold and, you know, he gave you all the blessings before you started on this sort of adventure.
Yes.
So in all this time, when you were in Ghana and Washington, your mind would have traveled several times, you know, back to Bhagwan's feet. Like,
yes, yes.
So, like, what were your expectations? Like, what did you, what are you looking forward to?
Looking forward, you see, basically, if Swami would come and talk to me, call me and talk to me, all these things. But then I consoled myself by, I told my wife also, you see, there are two types of TVs. The older model, you have to press the TV buttons and all and then come. The newer model is remote control. I am a newer model. Swami is doing remote control.
That's a very interesting example. Yes.
Yes. That has been your experience.
That has been my experience.
So you have been completely, your life has been remote controlled from Prashant.
Remote control.
Wow. So that experience in Washington, in World Bank was, must have been a really very, very valuable experience in terms of your career and, you know, understanding how to execute these projects, big projects.
True. And in 1986 when I went, 87 they computerized the whole World Bank, withdrew all secretaries. And everybody has to do his own typing. That helped me a lot. Even
Yes, I mean, you're one of those very few elders who's very conversant with technology.
Yes. So this, where you retired was with the World Bank in?
Yes, okay. retired in 95, I retired from service.
Right.
1 year I worked as consultant, 96 I came back here.
Okay. So it was in 96 that you came back to India.
Yes.
So, okay.
Yeah, so this experience in Africa and in World Bank, how did that help when it came finally to executing directly Bhagwan's projects?
One is this insight into procurement was a great help. Of course, this thing, again, it was Swami's grace only to complete things in time. For everything had a deadline. In the World Bank, everything has a deadline.
Right.
So that helped a lot in sort of creating a discipline of
Hmm. Especially because that. Bhagwan's projects all I think had shorter deadlines than anything in the world.
Perhaps.
You can imagine the super speciality hospital in a year's time, the water projects in maybe a couple of years' time. So,
I think every project of Bhagwan, a major project, had serious deadlines and you were used to deadlines.
Yeah, but coming to when I came here on the 4th or 5th of July 2007, I got a call to come to Parthi. And be prepared to stay for some time. There is a project coming there. And I guessed it must be Indoor Stadium because Srinivas had sent me some designs. I had worked on them. Then when I came here, when I asked the people here, I was told to do the project. I said, how long will it take? They didn't answer me directly. They said, Abdul Kalam is inaugurating on November 23rd.
So that gave you what, how many days for the project?
134 days.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Little over 3 months. So one can imagine this is not merely an edifice, you know. It's an artistic edifice to begin with.
Absolutely.
A beautifully crafted commemorative building right in front. Yes. And then you have to take care of procurement of very specialized flooring, no? For the various courts. So there's a volleyball
court.
All
this, a lot of help came from Mr. Srinivas. He did a lot of scouting around and getting things and all that.
So luckily this project administration with very, very tight deadlines, it came into a lot of good use over here in Prashanthi.
But what was the immediate reaction when they said that Kalam is going to inaugurate this?
So my God, how to do it? But Swami is there.
Yes, Swami is there. But were there any tense moments during that construction period?
Construction period, there was a very tense moment towards the end. It's got a space frame on the roof. The space frame is laid in a particular sequence. Start from point zero, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, then come back to zero, and it must join. So it becomes a complete unit. And the tolerance available there is hardly half a millimeter or 1 millimeter.
Oh, it should fit exactly.
It has to fit exactly. And it's got all bolts and nuts and all. And it just would not fit. We spent 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 5 days, nothing happening. Top designers came down, you do this, you do that, nothing happening. Somewhere somebody had made a mistake in that whole thing. And with the result that the dimension got shifted.
This is right at the end of the...
Towards the end, when the roof was coming up. This.
Like a few days left for the inauguration.
Few days left. And I just didn't know what to do. Because whatever you did, you just couldn't get these things to match. So, one night from the site only, I prayed to Swami. Swami, I finished my resources, I'm out. You do the thing and sort it out for me. Please help me out. If you don't do this, we don't know. We can't open it on this date unless this is joined. How can you have a stadium without a roof? And that night at midnight, 11 o'clock, when I came home, they called me, it's joined. So I rushed up there and celebrated, took photographs.
Did they do anything new to get that?
They kept on trying. You see, somewhere some mistake had occurred. And it's like searching for a needle in a haystack. They found the needle.
Wow. How was the experience of working for the super speciality hospital? Because that was such a huge project. And
like, were you aware that a super speciality hospital was coming up in Whitefield?
No. Not really aware. One day I was told that super hospital will come. The site is so and so place. Go to the site. So I went to the site. There the L&T fellows were already there. So we discussed it and started it.
So what was your assignment when you were there, you know, working for this particular super speciality hospital?
I was in a project manager to manage the project and get it done in time and in proper shape.
Right.
And one good thing is I had a good team. I had about 9 to 10 people working with me. Every one of them was devoted and wanting to do the best and even more than their best. Suppliers, you should see, they were so keen. One supplier came and said, sir, all that I want is one of my tiles to be put in the hospital. One tile to be put in the hospital. And all the suppliers went back happy. There was one fellow who did the sthapati work sort of thing.
The sculpturing work?
Sculpturing. It's not made of concrete, not stone. It was a small firm. It was a very small firm. The first job we got was Dwarapalakai and Traivindavan. Those two standing there. Then he's a graduate from Mahabalipuram Sculpture College. Then he had about 8-9 lakhs worth of work. He did the work, and at the end of the project, we paid him whatever is due, minus retention. And we were all happy, he went away. Then after 1 year, this fellow was missing. We kept on asking him, come and take your retention money, come, and he wouldn't come, it seems. I wasn't there, but the people there told me. He wouldn't come, he wouldn't take it at all. Then they asked him, why, what's the problem? Sir, I feel guilty. Why? After I did this project, my work has expanded tenfold or fifteenfold. I've got projects in Ujjain, I've got projects in your Varanasi, I've got project here, I've got project there. All this has come from this. How can I take anything more from here? Yeah,
so many blessings flowed from being part of such a project.
But then the people there convinced him that unless you take it, we can't close the accounts. So the money was given to him. He promptly went to the bank and donated it to some.
Swami. You must have had so many such very touching moments working for the hospital.
Yes, throughout. Of course, the most touching moment was May 23rd, 2000. Swami was going around the half-built hospital in a golf cart. And I was leading him to show the various things. And then at one particular place, he got down. And this Rajan Sood was there, everybody, they were talking to him.
They're the architects.
Architects. He started talking to them. Then he suddenly looked at me and said, come. I went to him. Then he started rotating his hand. I thought he's going to give me vibhuti, I'm very lucky. I held the hand like this and bang came a chain through his hand. And then not that, he put it on my head. He took off my, he told me, take off your specs. Took it and then he put it on, otherwise you can't put it on. And that has been the very important milestone in my life.
Yeah, this is a moment many people would live throughout your life for such a...
It just gives you such a feeling of assurance that he knows everything, you know, because I remember, because I have seen you at that time, you know, when you were working at the hospital and how busy your day was. I mean, you know, right from 7 in the morning till 10, 11, every day you used to work. And, you know, talking to all sorts of contractors. Contractors selling from tiles and pins and to selling MRI machines and, you know, every gamma camera, everything was there. And you were handling all these contractors and with so much of energy all through the day. I was frankly amazed when at that time I used to see, because you know I was involved in some way in the hospital information system, and I remember just to attend one meeting we used to do so many preparations. I mean, a meeting can be a very very stressful experience. That was the time when I realized how stressful a meeting can be, because you have to prepare so much for a meeting and then be ready for any question that will come. So, though just a half an hour session with all these people, but you need so much of background work. And now, I was involved in very, very one, you know, one tiny aspect of the hospital, but you were looking after practically everything of the hospital.
But the thing is, everybody you worked with was willing to give his best more than ever. Then it becomes easy. And no other place have I noticed that.
Yeah, this must have been a totally different experience compared to anything you had worked on before.
So, is this one of those things that you really loved? I mean, working in Swami's project versus working in World Bank or anywhere?
Well, there is no comparison.
Yes.
Nothing like working for Swami. In this, to give you satisfaction and happiness and health also.
Because it gives you energy.
Gives energy.
Amazing. And you've been involved with so many projects. I mean, you started off with the Gokulam residential complex, then the hospital came, then the Indo Stadium came, and then you got the chance to work for Bhagwan's residence in Traivindavan. And then in Parthi, looking after, building the staff quarters in the hospitals, both the hospitals, you sewage treatment plant. I mean, there are so many projects after that Bhagwan has blessed you with. And all the experience, I think it's now coming so much in handy.
You see, he never lets you down.
Swami never lets you down.
He said, treat me as a friend.
Yes.
And a friend in need is a friend indeed. So that's what it is. And a couple of other things about this injury to my toe. And
please.
When I was working in Gokulam, 1 week left for completing the canteen.
Yes.
I was inspecting it and somebody had thrown a wooden piece with a nail projecting upwards.
Uh-huh.
I stepped on it and I felt it entering into my left foot.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Through the shoe.
Oh.
It was a shoe with a fairly thin sole, worn out. Sneakers. Then I thought, my God, now this is happening. Swami is doing this to me. On the opening day also, I have next 5 days, for everything I have to take a decision.
Right.
And if I'm incapacitated, what am I to do? Then I called Bhakta, who was my assistant.
Hmm.
I told him, look here, next 4 or 5 days, you'll have to take charge and finish, because I don't think I'll be able to manage with this thing, and I'll have to go to the hospital now. And I slowly walked from Gokulam to my residence in the new guest office, Vrindavan. And then I sat down there and then I started thinking, one, I have to go to hospital. Two, I have to get cured as quickly as possible. Three, I have to answer my wife why I didn't buy a new shoe. She's been pressing me to buy one. So then I sat down, I removed the shoe, white shoe, and I was wearing white socks. And I was expecting that when I pulled out the socks, there will be crimson and marks, red marks all over. That's what I felt.
Mm.
I pulled out the sock, pure white, not a hole, nothing.
Oh, but you had felt it piercing in.
I felt it piercing. Mm. And then I took it out.
And the hole was like right in the middle of the sneaker, in which?
It was in the front part of the foot, middle.
Okay. Mm.
And it was not on a side, it was right in the middle.
So it could not have missed your foot as such, like.
Which one?
If the nail has pierced through the sneaker.
No, right in the center, right. I felt the pain also.
Oh, yeah, that's what I thought. It would have at least pricked your heel.
But when I took it out, I found that there was nothing. Then I thanked Swami, sorted out everything.
Yes.
Just like that. And similarly, once when we were planning the super hospital, I had to go to Chennai to meet the L&T designers. I went there, stayed in a guest house. In the morning, when they were coming down in the lift, somebody with a very heavy shoe stepped on my toe.
Oh.
And it started paining. And it started, I could feel it really throbbing. And we went, we finished the meeting, and we had to get back next morning to Bangalore. So I got back to Bangalore, and Sunna said, you go to Parthi. I am coming next morning. So I said, I don't have the key to the flat in Puttaparthi. He said, stay in Shantabhavan. My one and only stay in Shantabhavan. And then stayed there. And they gave you a thin bed sheet to cover yourself. You don't need anything more. It's hot. Even the bed sheet was, if it touched my toe, it was paining badly.
Oh, it had become that tender?
It had become very tender. It had become blue.
Mm-hmm.
And then next morning, I somehow walked on my heel and reached Swami's interview room, where he talked to us, told us a few things to do about this hospital, and then I came out. So they gave us Pad Namaskar, I took Pad Namaskar, came out. Then when I was coming back in front of S1, I suddenly felt, what happened to my pain? I looked at the toe, perfectly normal, nothing on it.
I mean, after you had come out of the interview room, everything had gone.
I didn't notice it in the Kulwanthal. We have forgotten about it.
Mm.
And coming near S1 block, I noticed it.
So merely being in his presence, I think it worked its magic.
He must have known this has happened. I thought it.
I mean, they say that for every instance where Bhagwan makes his presence felt for us to know that, you know, he has saved us, there are millions such instances where he doesn't even tell us, you know.
Yes.
Doesn't make it visible or obvious for us to know that he has helped us. And I think that is every devotee's experience.
Correct.
And in your case, given that you had so many challenges and all the time into so many projects with deadlines and so many things to look after, I think that experience is only getting confirmed again and again.
And for me, Bishu, personally, when as I listened to Sir's narration of his experiences, especially working with Bhagwan, one takeaway definitely for me would be this, that when we have this opportunity to serve Bhagwan, at that time our mind will throw up so many concerns, like will this get completed, what about your life? There are so many such concerns in the mind throws up. But what Sir's really the story tells us is that if we let all those concerns by and just have faith in Bhagwan, then automatically everything else is taken care of.
Yes.
We have the opportunity of being in an instrument of in His divine mission.
Yes.
And that's all the assurance we need. You know?
Yes. Yeah, really. I think there have been so many instances like that. No? So when you wonder, a project is given to you and you're wondering, how am I going to do it? And it just happens.
And the greatest assurance I got was in an interview you gave us.
Okay.
In March 2009.
I mean, that was the time when Bhagwan was hardly giving interviews to anyone.
That was the first interview for me. Besides the other one, family interview. My wife was also there. The central theme in the interview was Swami saying, I am there for you.
Wow.
Don't worry, I am there. I will look after it. I am in charge, that sort of thing.
Wow.
So, and we know that he is there.
Yes, throughout your life, your life itself has been a testimony to this.
Even after 2011,
yes,
he has been there all the time, and in various small ways, he shows his presence. There is one very interesting thing which I did not tell you last time. I forgot about it. Last August, I was in Malaysia. I had gone there for 3 weeks leave, and my son-in-law is a doctor. He's working in one of the leading hospitals. So he said, why don't you all get checked up? So we went for a checkup. In the morning, I asked him, we are coming to the hospital. Will we have to wait a long time? He said, nothing. Nowhere. X-ray you may have to wait. You see, when he told me I would have to wait in the X-ray room, I thought I'll take a book and read. He offered me one of his books. But then I remembered that I had Sherlock Holmes, full works in my iPhone. I can read that again and again, you can always read that. Then I said, I'll show you this thing. And I pressed iBooks. And one book which I had not downloaded or ordered or paid for had come into this. And it is out of print also. This is V.K. Gokak's Satya Sai Baba, The Man and the Avatar.
Wow.
So that means I have to read this. So from that day till I left...
Sherlock Holmes to Sai.
Sherlock Holmes to Sai. So he got all the pages.
Wow.
And I could read this before I left Malaysia. I finished it. We came back here. My wife has got an iPad, which she uses only for playing Scrabble. So... she came and she wanted to play Scrabble. She opened it, she got the same book.
Oh.
So you need Sherlock Holmes to explain how that book came into your phone.
And then later on, she couldn't read the whole book. She read a few pages, kept the thing aside, then later on wanted to play Scrabble. She will open Scrabble, one move, two moves. Scrabble is not working. And Swami's picture will come.
Oh my God.
So till she finished reading this whole book, she couldn't speak. I will Scrabble continuously.
Amazing.
And this is last year, after his Mahasamadhi.
Yes.
So he is very much there, and he is going to be there. And
amazing.
What did you say the book's name was? Because now I want to read that book.
Mr. Gokak's book.
Written by
right?
Mr. V.K. Gokak. Okay.
The man and the avatar.
The man and the avatar. V.K. Gokak.
Swami chose this time not Murfit but Gokak. Amazing. I mean, actually, this is something that I was thinking of asking you, that after April 2011, we saw so many people, you know, who were past their 60s, 70s, you know, they hung up their boots because, you know, they have worked for so many years and now you want to relax. And it's fair. But you are someone, we are seeing that after Bhagwan left his physical form, you are someone who is actually more active. I mean, now you have greater responsibilities. At that time, you are not like the sole engineer of the ashram, but now you're looking after the entire ashram and looking after all the projects now. I mean, what really made you feel that post April 2011, no, I have to keep working and I have to keep working even harder when most of the people of your age have actually taken backseat?
When I was convinced that it was a remote control TV. What does it matter where he is, where I am?
Yes.
If my thing was dependent entirely on physical connection, then I would feel sort of... I mean, physical connection was there. It was great.
When he gave you that interview and all that happened,
At least he gave that before...
yeah.
The Mahasamadhi.
Yes. And that is the reason why, you know, whenever we look at you, one feels so inspired. because you're close to 85, but
82,
but you still work with so much of energy and enthusiasm.
But since last year, I've had one or two bouts of illnesses, which is sometimes makes me feel inadequate. That does happen. But let's see. Swami will look after it.
Always. I mean, I think given that you have worked with so much of energy all your life, that becomes, you cannot accept yourself not working to that level, even though age is catching up.
So, like one question from my side.
Yeah.
This is something I've been wanting to ask you so many times.
Yes.
You're someone who's really experienced a taste of serving Bhagwan.
Yeah.
And how would you describe it? Like, in the sense that there must be so many people who are there on that fringe. Like, they want to serve Bhagwan, but they're thinking, how can I dedicate myself, or how should I dedicate myself? What do you think, what would be your advice to people when it comes to serving Swami?
There is nothing which can equal it, because He is a support. He is a guide. And He is the judge. He does everything for you. And the kindness that comes from Him, the grace that comes from, the love that He showers, cannot be equaled.
Yes.
And once you do one small thing, you feel so grateful. You're overwhelmed with gratitude and you want to do more and more.
Okay.
You have to take the first step, rest will follow.
Rest will follow. Okay. That's...
And the other thing also which I wanted to ask is, especially in these times, many a times youngsters get into the feeling that if you want to grow in your career and if you want to do it fast and if you choose to stick to all the values and principles, be truthful, you know, don't try to compromise, then it is not going to be a smooth path. It is not going to be a path which will help you grow quickly in the corporate ladder. And you might actually end up, in a worldly sense, being a fool, trying to stick to everything and losing so many opportunities. And someone else will take this opportunity and grow up and, you know, go up in the ladder much faster than you are. What has been your experience and what is your advice to people who
feel... Basically, to be happy, you must be self-confident. If you are not confident, it means you have slipped up somewhere and you are not able to do it correctly. And all these moral principles that you talk about, they're already ingrained in you, in your conscience. And as Swami said, if you follow your conscience, self-confidence will come, success to some measure will come, to whatever you deserve. And if you have self-confidence, you can be happy. What a man deserves, what man looks for in life is happiness. Basically, and you cannot get it by any means other than working for God.
I think that's a very beautiful perspective. You said that, you know, someone might grow in the corporate ladder quickly,
yes,
but he will not be happy.
That's
he want to have be happy if you have to follow conscience.
You have to follow the conscience, which is already in you. Nobody has to tell you.
Correct.
And this was in my second form.
Mm-hmm.
We had a class called Moral Science.
Yes.
It's a Jesuit class.
Mm-hmm.
And there the Jesuits told me that you have to follow your conscience. If you don't do this, at some stage or other, you will end up being unhappy.
Yes.
It is not purely a Hindu thing or anything. This is a,
yes.
In a Christian school, they taught me this.
Yes. Yes.
You know, sometimes they have these discussions. So do the means, do they justify the ends?
Yes.
And here we can see very clearly that when the orientation, when you're really looking at fulfillment, otherwise, if you can ignore the voice of conscience within you that keeps guiding you onto the right path, but when you begin to ignore that, you may have success at times,
yes,
but you do not have the fulfillment, lasting, yes, satisfaction.
Yes, that's happiness. And ultimately, we forget that actually our pursuit is not success, our pursuit is happiness.
Happiness,
yes.
I think that is a very, very beautiful insight for all, especially youngsters.
And what is inspiring is the example which was provided by his grandparents at a very young age and keeping these two ideals in front of him. And it actually, as sir said, it Swami has already been part of his life, maybe lives. And that Swami actually becomes an active part of his life,
makes
him part of his mission. I think that really is such a blessing to have people like that guide you so, yes, early in your life. a lot of gratitude we all of us owe to our parents, our grandparents.
Absolutely. The other question that I want to ask you, sir, is as someone who now is so much responsible for the running of the ashram, and there are so many youngsters, former students of Bhagwan's institutions who are working in various capacities in the ashram and in various institutions, be it inside the ashram, be it Radio Sai, be it in the Central Trust Office, be it in the Book Trust, be it in the hospitals. What would you like to say to all these students, former students and youngsters working in various institutions now?
You see, basically, I would like to say one thing. I can admire them, but I can't advise them. Because they've grown up with Swami for such a long time that every one of them, most of them I've seen, are gems. And they will do well, provided they get the right place to work in. And it is like what Shirdi Baba said, there are so many mango flowers, but flowers will follow, mangoes will remain. But in the mango tree which bears Swami's voice, most of the mangoes will remain. Only a few flowers will fall.
Wow, amazing. Fantastic. Thank you so much, sir. Well, you are someone from whom we take inspiration, but you are someone who is admiring us, so that is very strange. And we only pray to Bhagwan and wish that he blesses you with more energy and more enthusiasm, because the ashram needs you so much, and all of us youngsters here, we need you so much, because there is so much to learn from you and benefit from your experience, such wide experience when it comes to working for Bhagwan, because you have worked elsewhere and also worked in close proximity of Bhagwan. And we really look forward to benefiting from your experience and your devotion and commitment to Bhagwan, so that, you know, we in some ways also contribute to Bhagwan's mission.
Thank you.
And thank you from my side, sir. Like, as I said, this provided me a lot of insights into what should be our attitude when we are serving Bhagwan. And what really came through for me was whatever talents, whatever skills we have is something that he has provided us. And the best use we can make of it is in his service. I think that is really a very powerful lesson.
And we do it because, you know, very simple, as sir mentioned it, you know, if you want happiness, you should follow your conscience. And
yes,
that is the best way to make your life fulfilled and also be an instrument in Bhagwan's mission. You know, as Bhagwan said, you have to follow that master. The master is the conscience. And then everything else becomes easy. You will finish the game of life. Happiness is union with God. Thank you so much, sir, for
thank
coming.
Thank you very much
today,
for
sir,
giving me this chance.
Well, it's our opportunity. Sai Ram.
Thank you.
So that was the second and final part of the conversation with Mr. Satish Naik, the Chief Engineer of Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, as well as the Chief Engineer of the Prashant Nilayam Ashram. And as you heard, you could see the reverence and the respect that he has for Sai students, for former students of Bhagwan's University working in his institutions. That actually shows his humility. Apart from the fact that, yes, whoever he may be, once he is touched by the Lord, he or she is no longer the same again. Once we experience his presence, and once he takes us into his fold, and once we say that, Lord, I am yours, we are destined to lead extraordinary lives. Our lives no more remain ordinary, and our lives will become extraordinary once it starts reflecting his message and his love. And that is what should be our mission in life. We have been touched by the Lord, and that is the simple and the most powerful reason why we have extraordinary destinies. And we have to fulfill that, keeping the Lord in our mind's eye and strengthening our heart with a faith that is rock-like and a devotion that is like that of Hanuman and Meera. So I will leave you with these thoughts. It's time to bring the curtains on this last leg of Thursday Live from the studios of Radio Sai. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. Thank you so much for being with us. As always, you can send us your feedback by writing to listener at
www.radiosai.org. Thank you so much. And finally, goodbye and loving Sairam from Prashant and Lim.